Welcome back, baseball fans, to the 17th episode of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. One of the only baseball podcasts out there, probably the only one with a Major League certified agent. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatchGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. And with me is, of course, the man who the show is named after, MLB certified agent Joshua Kuznick. Josh, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm surprised I'm actually able to talk to you. We are recording this, for full candidness, a couple days before the trade deadline, so I'm kind of surprised I could get you on.
Yeah, I've been slammed today. I have a little bit of a window right now, so why not?
Well, I don't know. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start trade deadline, or do you want to start All-Star Game festivities? Because I got both topics I got questions for.
It's up to you. I'm easy.
There's something we need to cut out for the show. Let's start with the All-Star Game, because I was texting you a little bit back and forth when you were opening baseball packs with some baseball players. So tell me about that.
No, that was great. Mike Oz met me at the Topps booth over at the Fan Fest, and we got to open a 92 Topps pack together and record it for his Yahoo show. And my wife got to take pictures, and she actually got interviewed by the PlayStation people for a pre-video like cutscene for their MLB The Show 2018. So hopefully that'll be in the game. And I got to do my thing, and it was fun. I think I surprised him when he asked if I wanted to trade for any of his cards, and I asked for Kevin Morton, but it played out pretty well. It was funny. I'm a better natural on camera than I am on the radio, so that was a relief. I didn't throw in any you knows, I don't think.
As you did 9 times in the first 10 minutes of last episode.
Yeah, that was not good. not my finest hour of speaking.
Did you get any good cards in particular in your packs?
I think I got a Scott Stachowiak rookie and an Aaron Seeley. It's always strange when you pull cards of like an Aaron Seeley where you've met him and know him from scouting and as a player when I was a kid. So nothing of intrinsic value, just personal, sentimental value. So it was neat. It was a lot of fun. I got to save the pack. And hilariously, I guess Mike has a ball signed by every one of his guests that's been on his show. So Alyssa Milano, A-Rod, Scott Boras, like everybody's on this baseball. And he asked me to sign it, and I was like, oh, what the hell? And I said, who's the least famous person you could have me sign under? And I looked at the, like, side panel. Pudge is on the sweet spot, and I looked at the side, and it's Josh Dumal from Las Vegas, Fergie's husband. I'm like, oh, okay, I don't feel bad signing under him.
Well, he's kind of a stud. I mean, he is dating Fergie, after all. Or, you know, he got, you know, Fergie, but still. Yeah, I get your point, yeah.
It's Josh Dumal. Aziz Ansari has, like, the greatest Josh Dumal joke. It's like, Josh Dumal's on Las Vegas, and he doesn't even know what time Las Vegas is on. So I felt okay, like, given the Aziz Ansari joke. I was like, all right, I could do this without completely devaluing whatever this is. I actually felt like I was graffiti tagging it, because what the hell am I doing on that ball?
That's so funny.
But it was good. It was fun. The Fan Fest was fun. My dad came by. My wife was there. And one of the cool things is, I guess, at the MLB booth where they were selling all of their All-Star memorabilia, they had the MLB Authentic booth, and they had some WBC jerseys for sale, which shocked me, because as far as I knew, the players kept all of their own jerseys. And I asked them to look for stuff, and I actually bought one of Seth Lugo's WBC Puerto Rico jerseys. And as soon as Seth saw me post it on Twitter, he's like, well, that's not real.
That's nice.
He's like, there's no way that's real. He's like, we got one of each, and I got one of them. I'm like, dude, I have the game tag of when you wore this. They must have slipped in and gotten it from me. He's like, they didn't get it. I have it. I'm like, well, one of them's fake.
That's crazy.
Nah, I think Seth got his jersey replaced. Well, maybe, who knows? But MLB authenticated has a pretty good track record of not selling fake stuff. So I'm gonna have to disagree with Mr. Lugo there and just assume that I actually got one.
Yeah, maybe they did the bait and switch when he was in the shower or something, you know.
I would believe that before I would believe MLB faking stuff. But it was interesting. That was the first reaction. It's like, hey, I saw that jersey you got. There's no way that's real. And I'm like, I didn't buy it from a dealer. I bought it from the league.
Yeah, of course. That's your first reaction. Like, oh, well, but it is from the league.
Yeah, like, this can't be fake, so... they were selling all the WBC jerseys. The only thing that I because of how expensive all the festivities and the travel and the events and the All-Star Game generally being expensive, I didn't have that much discretionary income to buy dumb baseball stuff for my collection, but they did have a Team Venezuela game used Miguel Cabrera jersey from the WBC for $1,500, and I was very angry I did not purchase it.
What is it with you not pulling the trigger on stuff these days?
Couldn't pull the trigger. I could buy Lugo's. I had no problem with that. That's a Klein. I can justify that one, but the Miggy one for $1,500, I was like, I know this is worth more, and I know I can get it signed, but alas, I asked my wife. I'm like, it's a non-client. I can't justify this. And plus, I just bought the Koufax that week, so it's like I can't buy two things for $1,500.
Yeah, true. But, you know, the Lugo thing, you can if you've got a good accountant, you can almost call that a business expense. I mean, yeah.
Oh, it's a work. It's most certainly going to be a work decoration.
That's amazing. That's so.
Yeah. So I now have a Lugo jersey. I have an Ushuaia jersey. I have a Jeremy jersey. I have a Brantley jersey. I need to get one from Selsky. But I actually sent out like a mass text last year to every client I had saying, hey, can you please save one of your jerseys from the season so I could hang it up in the office? Every single player said yes. I did not get one jersey at the end of the season.
What a shock. If you don't self-address stamp envelopes those to the players, you got no shot.
It was just funny. I can't think. I think Brantley was the only player to ever grab me a jersey. And then I finally got one from Jeremy on opening day this year. And Lugo, I bought at the thing. And then a Suarez, I know the Padres took control of like all this stuff, or MLB takes care of all that. So as soon as the Suarez was for sale in San Diego when I went out there, I just bought it immediately.
Nice.
So at least I've got jerseys of my clients on the wall finally.
We've got the All-Star game coming to DC next year, so what should I be going to, both kind of as a fanboy and as a, you know, if I want to call myself a baseball nerd?
I had to go to all the events and stuff for work to see everybody in the crowd, but like as far as like the games itself and whatnot, it's interesting. I the Home Run Derby especially, I guess watching it from an agent perspective, or like what I do, it's like an extended over glorified round of batting practice. It was so much less exciting in Miami than I'm used to. I mean, even San Diego last year was awesome, but with the Marlins Derby, it was like, yeah, you know, it wasn't all that exciting in person. The Futures game is always kind of neat, and then the All-Star game just does not matter at all. It's just fun.
Yeah, I'm assuming you're coming up for the All-Star game next year.
Hope so.
Well, definitely, I'm sure I'll see you, if nothing else.
Yeah, so. I hope so. I'm hoping everyone that was in it this year gets back in it, and I'm hoping some other guys that did not make it this year that I have made it. I think, I don't know, Mr. Swy is as good as advertised, I hope.
Yeah, and I think one of many reasons I wanted to interview, you know, and get you back on was because the other night we had the Lugo versus Suárez one-on-one matchup, kind of.
It did happen the other day. I was totally going to go to that game, and then my wife wasn't feeling great, and the price to get out there was astronomical, and I apologized to both guys, and I was like, do you guys really want me here? Because I'll totally do it. I have no excuse to not be there other than that, you know, Melissa's not feeling great. And Lugo was funny. He said, you know, my girlfriend doesn't even like coming to games. You get better analysis on TV. And he was joking. And that's why he's like, whatever, man, you come to enough games. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, some people would be talking Mayweather-McGregor, but I was definitely talking Lugo and Ushuaia in this household.
What's funny is no one cares about that matchup except for the two guys and myself.
Well,
like no one cares.
Come
not
on,
an announcer, not a yeah. fan. Like no one knows about that, but like the three of us. So it's pretty funny. The first AB, Carlos got a hit, and Lugo is just fuming. And then like every other at bat was pretty, you know, pretty tough. And after the game, just it was funny. Lugo like, I hate facing that guy, and Ushuaia's like, man, that guy's really good. So it's been like that since they played each other in AA, and I actually have that really cool photo of the two of them in a pickoff play, Lugo chasing Ushuaia back to the base, and I think it was a third. I got it signed by both of them, so that's one of my favorite pictures in my career. I love that.
Now, are they buddies? Buddies maybe too strong of a word, but you know what I mean? Like, would they go get a drink or a dinner after the game?
Yeah, I mean, not. I don't think without me being there, they would go do that. I mean, they like each other enough. They certainly respect each other as players, but, you know, Seth's from Louisiana and is 2 years older than Carlos, and Carlos is 25 and from Florida. So it's like they all, by that point in time, they all kind of know their circle, and
right.
The only thing they really have in common is that they're both big leaguers and have the same agent.
Yeah, that is a good point. Yeah, that's a good
point. I mean, I can't think of a time where – me representing two people that didn't know each other led into them like being best friends. I you know, most of the guys, it's just weird. Most of the guys who hire me are friends of other players that I already represent. Most of my guys are referrals. So a lot of them do know each other, but it's been a long time since that happened. We're two just totally different guys just stayed in touch. I mean, they try to. Like, for instance, Jeffress spoke to Lugo on the phone last year while Seth was in AAA, so that was neat. And then they played in Texas and didn't even get to see each other this year. So it happens. I mean, the funniest was when Brantley played Asuaje this year, and Carlos said hi to him in the outfield, and he calls me after the game, and he's like, man, that guy's really intense. I'm like, yeah. I wouldn't talk to him post-game or pre-game.
That's so funny.
And he's like, bro, but like even during the game when somebody like – when he got on base, somebody tried talking to him like, yeah, that's a mistake.
Yeah, that's just a bad idea.
It's like just let it go, man. Just say hi to him afterwards.
Yeah, just give him the fist pound post-game. You'll be fine.
But it was really funny. So I texted Mike before the game. I said, hey, just say hi to Los. He's one of my guys and he's young and he's from back home. And Mike's like, yeah, no problem. And then after the game, Carl's like, yeah, I saw Mike. I'm like, oh, did you get to talk to him? And did he tell you how I've never made him laugh? And his answer was, I just said hi and then kind of walked away because he was kind of in the zone. I'm like, yeah, that's about right.
That's so great. So crow a little bit. Seth Lugo's pitching pretty well. Asuaje's back in 325 or whatever it is as we're taping this. You know,
so that's good.
Yeah, right. We got, you know, Jeffress is putting in his time with Texas. I mean, we got a lot of guys to talk about. Who should we talk about? Who are you going to crow about?
I mean, Seth and Los are doing great. The minor league guys are all doing their thing. I mean, I don't have a laundry list today of young guys to pay attention to like I did a few years ago. But I was telling somebody this the other day. In 1 week, I'd signed Tyler White, Dalton Pompey, Los, and Lugo all in the same week. And he's like, why don't you replicate that? I'm like, because all four of them had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, and if I could replicate it, don't you think I would do that, sir?
Just every week, all four minor league guys I sign are big leaguers. Yeah, that's just that easy.
You know, why didn't I think of that? What a great idea. I mean, just replicate that. Thanks.
I mean, one guy I scouted since high school, and his agent actually passed away. So I like can't replicate that. Yeah. And the other guy was a roommate of a guy that had just gotten drafted. The other guy was the roommate of a guy who was in college still. And then Lugo, I went to the field to watch one of my clients on a rehab outing, and Lugo started the game, and that's how I found him.
That's just crazy. It's amazing how it all comes together.
I didn't plan on any of those guys.
Well, I tell it almost every time we talk, but goodness, how about the GameStop? You know, you met a client at GameStop is one of my favorites.
I met a client at GameStop, and I mean, I met Thomas Saputsky there too, and he's the Mets' number one pitching prospect. I mean, he has an agent, doesn't help me, but still ran into a GameStop.
It's so great.
It happens. You always got to be prepared. I mean, I looked terrible that day, but I still got hired. So, I mean, it's a running joke with some of my clients, and I do have to be a little better at it, but I do like to joke. It's like, imagine how good I must be at my job to dress this way. And it's like, yeah, I shouldn't have to say that anymore. that comes up. But no, Carlos is surprising everyone but me, I guess, and his family. I mean, everyone's just stunned, and I mean, this is quite literally what he always has done. So for me, with watching him, it was always a matter of just him getting his opportunity, because once he gets his opportunity, he never gives it up.
Well, and you know, everybody's going to talk about the Craig Kimbrel side in Boston, but think about it. Now they've got their starting second baseman and starting center fielder for the next 6 years in that trade in Margot and Asuaje.
Well, the thing that trade did, and it ultimately reminds me of, is the Greinke trade with the Royals.
That's a good one, too, with Escobar and
Escobar, Kane, Odorizzi, and Jeffress. I represented 50% of the trade at that time.
Oh, geez. Well, that gives a perfect segue, because we are, I don't know, 72 hours or whatever it is from the trade deadline. So tell us a little bit from an agent's perspective what's going on now and what's going on with you and everything in between.
There's stuff brewing. I mean, no pun intended. But, I mean, there's always a possibility for someone to get dealt. And at this time of year, teams are always looking for arms. And, you know, if JJ got traded next couple of days, would not shock me in the least. If he stayed with Texas, wouldn't shock me either. So it's one of those things that's always a possibility, especially in the last 3 days. But we will not know until something happens. So I got to be ready for that. And then you have other guys that are in interesting situations, like Steve Selsky on Boston, who has an option remaining, but is on the 40-man for the Red Sox, who don't have a ton of roster spots. So I highly doubt they would just designate him and get rid of him while he still has an option remaining, when a rebuilding club could just put in a claim for him and then send him to AAA without taking up a 25-man spot. So he might get traded. It's something to pay attention to. And if he doesn't, then he doesn't, and we deal with that. But out of all my guys, I would say, yeah, Selsky and Jeffress could always get dealt. And then God knows, with a bunch of my minor league guys, any of those guys could go at any time.
Now, have you, I'm sure you have, but what players, or tell us a little bit about, a story or two about having a player traded at the deadline?
Jeremy was traded last year's deadline, remember?
In the
Lucre trade.
That's a great point, yeah.
That was nuts. That wasn't going to happen because Lucre took that. He was originally traded to the Indians, and we all thought that was what that was going to be. And then the next day, he rejected the deal, and next thing you know, Texas comes in for Lucre, and they demanded Jeremy be part of it, and that's that.
Let me take a half step back and just ask you a little bit of a baseball – maybe it's not even semantics, but how does a trade actually occur? How do you find out about it? You know, once
I found out on Twitter once.
Really?
Yeah, I found out – the player and I found out on Twitter while he was in the fifth inning of a game.
So what do you do at that point?
You get really pissed off and call the team until they answer.
I mean,
be like, why did I just find this out on the internet before my client did?
And I'm, without breaking any team in confidentiality, what was the response? Oops.
But a big apology. Somebody said something they should not have, and they actually blamed the other ball club in the deal. They're like, it wasn't us.
Interesting. So then you don't really know what to do at that point. Yeah.
In fairness, I completely believe the excuse that it was the other ball club, given who was involved in this transaction.
Okay, so in a normal transaction, let me start with that.
In a normal transaction, the player will be notified, and then I get called by either the team or the player. In some cases, the team will call me and give me the heads up, but most of the time, player just gets called in the office and calls me.
And then what is your responsibility? Are you then therapist? Are you then travel agent?
Therapist and realist, where I got to get them help. I got to help get them set up with a new ball club.
Moving, shipping car,
meeting the team on the road, making sure all their stuff's there when they get there, calling the vendors that all have to handle all the endorsements. So it's a lot. It's just a lot of just it upends guys' lives when they get dealt. Even on the minor league side, it's tough because they got to break leases, and they've got leases with five other players, and living in a house that's $2,000 a month for six people. And it's really complicated on the minor league side, especially since where the hell are they going to sign a month to month lease in July or August?
Well, and you know, the MLB players, you know, particularly some of the bigger guys, can just throw money at the problem. But what are the minor league guys?
Oh yeah. It's
do?
Not an issue in the major league so much. I mean, the minor league side though, it's a big upheaval.
I mean, you know, you could be going from – I'll just use the Nationals in the Oakland trade last week. All of a sudden, one of the players was in the Gulf Coast League, and the next thing you know, he's playing in Stockton in California. You're like, wait a minute. How did I get here?
Yeah, it's really just like that. I mean, I remember when Darren Ford got traded and was with the Brewers, and it was part of, like, that old Ray Durham trade, and ends up in the Giants system, and he went from Brevard County to the Cal League.
And I mean, what do you do? I mean, literally, if you have a car, how do you get your car out there? I mean, do you just start UPS boxing stuff up? I mean, and who the hell would do that?
Pretty much. And you know, it's on the player. The player has to pay all those relocation fees in the minor league. So if they want their car shipped, they got to pay for it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's more than they make in a month, I would think. More than their salary.
Yeah, it's not good. Again, big league guys, 40-man guys, there's rules in place for all that stuff that's been collectively bargained for. But, you know, on the minor league side, it's a big deal.
Now, how does the stuff at the major league level work? I mean, I said they can just throw money at it, but
the new team pays for all those costs, the relocation costs. We just submit the receipts.
Oh, really?
I've really never had a team complain, ever. Like, just that's what it is, and that's what they have to pay, and they have to cover a hotel for a certain amount of time until the player finds a permanent, you know, living place. And then if they can't, then the player pays X amount of dollars for whatever the family rate is for that hotel. So big leagues, it's very A to B to C. Minor leagues, it's a bit of a cluster.
So it's a much bigger pain, and we won't use that word. Pain is just fine for you when a minor leaguer gets traded than one of your guys, than a major leaguer.
Oh, absolutely. Or if a guy's traded for the first time in his life and has never been dealt before, that's kind of a shock too. But, you know, a guy like, for example, Mr. Jeffress, you know, with JJ, he's been on the Brewers, Royals, Blue Jays, Brewers, Rangers. So for him, he knows the drill.
Now, I don't want to use him as the example, but I'll use him as an example. Is he sitting by his phone? You know, he knows he may be on the block. We've seen his name in Twitter, you know, rumors.
He doesn't care. I mean, it's out of all of our hands, so whatever happens, happens.
So the player, and I'm not using Jeremy necessarily, but the player has just got his phone on by him, but he's going about his life.
Some guys absolutely do. That's happened before, where guys are just kind of holding their breath. I mean, especially in like player to be named later trades, like the Brantley deal, where it was either going to be Brantley or Taylor Green, and at the time we had no idea what the stipulations were, or when they were going to make their decision, or we didn't know anything. So it was an everyday thing that Mike or TG were going to get traded. And what's funny is at various times in the process, I told both of them they were part of the trade.
That's amazing.
I called Taylor. I'm like, hey, man, bad news. It's you. You're definitely going to be an Indian. And, you know, he freaks out, relocates his family. And then an hour later, I called him like, by the way, my bad.
Oops.
Yeah, I was totally wrong. Or, you know, the vice versa. Hey, Mike, there's no way you're getting dealt. Like, everything's totally fine. Just relax in Milwaukee. No big deal. And hour later, it's like, oh, you're going to Cleveland with LaPorta.
Amazing. It's amazing, too, that he was the name in that trade. And everybody remember, you know, LaPorta was, you know, the big guy in that trade.
He was the guy. But it's funny. That player to be named later is going to be someone important. At the time, it was either going to be Mike or TG. And at the time, Taylor was the minor league player of the year coming off a 30 home run season. And had he been healthy, he would have been a very good player for a long time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He just was never going to be as good as Mike. I mean, that we all kind of knew that. But we all thought Taylor was going to be a big leaguer for 15 years. Taylor, if you ever got a chance to talk to him, I mean, he's actually the I think he's the pro scouting director, or assistant pro scouting director for the Brewers now. That's his title.
I mean, I knew he worked in baseball. I didn't know he had advanced that quickly.
Oh, he is skyrocketing. Taylor's going to be a GM one day.
That's crazy.
There's no question in my mind. Book it right now. It's 2017 in July. I guarantee you Taylor Green will be a GM within the next 5 years. There's no way he won't be.
And I will say, you know, Milwaukee's done pretty well promoting people and getting people jobs. So,
I never wanted to hire a former client who retired more than Taylor Green. I would give him a job tomorrow.
That's interesting. That's really
interesting. No, Taylor, and I would tell him not to take my offer. He's going to be a GM. The guy made a ton of money in real estate, like from being smart about it, by learning about it the year he was injured, like completely self-taught, and knows a lot about finance, knows a lot about numbers. His dad was a coach in Canada, still does an academy there. His aunt, his like surrogate aunt, who's his mom's best friend, is actually Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City and Mannequin.
Really?
So every year I get the Christmas cards from the Greens, and Kim Cattrall's in it every year.
That's weird. That's
pretty cool. It's not going to lie. It's pretty cool.
That's really funny and really kind of a strange coincidence or strange, you know, one-off.
Yeah. Taylor loved when teammates brought that up, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure.
Especially when he played while Sex and the City was on the air.
Yeah, and most of her was on the air most weeks, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so, which is funny for me because I remember when I met him, he's like, you know, Kim Cattrall's a family friend, essentially like an aunt. And I was like, from Mannequin? He's like, most people say Sex and the City. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not that. But it's actually a funny story. The very first time I met him was at the Southern League All-Star Game. And he was essentially a nine-hole hitter for West Virginia, the Power that year. And he was hitting like 380 the entire season. That team had Kane, Brantley, Escobar, a guy named Charlie Fermain, who was their number one prospect at the time, Brent Brewer, like 11 big leaguers, Matt Gamble, and the team was just absolutely loaded. And I ended up meeting with him at the All-Star game, and I wore a pair of Vans and a beanie, and I think I was 20 I think I was 23 or 24 years old at the time. And I'm 35 now, and I still hear about my first meeting with Taylor Green from Taylor and his dad every single time I talk to them.
Yeah, but it looks good on you, though.
They were like, you were wearing a freaking toque with some skater shoes. It's like, that's crazy because I don't even skate. That's awesome. And I'm like, I totally believe you. I definitely owned those clothes. I just don't remember. And I remember the meeting. I just don't remember dressing that badly for it.
You sound like the ultimate wannabe hipster in that. That's so
great.
It
was not good. I dress very grungy, and I don't mean grungy as in homeless. Like I dress like I'm still in the 90s, and that gets me in trouble sometimes. I really need to up my game there. Now, some people have accused me of not GQing it up enough for them, but you know, I don't know if I'll ever get to that point, but I certainly need to upgrade the wardrobe at some point.
I might have given you a double take if I was going to be like, wait a minute, this dude's going to be my agent and he's rolling in with some Vans and a beanie. I got to say.
That's legitimately what happened, and I'll just point back to my previous comment. I must be just awesome at what I do to overcome that.
Because your fashion sense is a little meager.
It's gone, man. It's gone. I've had to be stopped from wearing, and I don't mean recently, but when I was starting out, it's like I had a Grunge is Dead t-shirt I would wear, and it's like, what am I doing? I honestly, for a long time, believed it did not matter what I wore. I'm like, I'm a good agent. I know what I'm doing. It's like, leave me alone when it comes to that. Like, I work for you guys, but you don't own me. And it's like, oh, wait, my job doesn't end when I go home. That's right.
Yeah, image is kind of everything, too, there, Andre Agassi.
Yeah, I know what my image is. It's still not very good when it comes to the way I dress. But, this is true, not famous, but well-known amongst agent circles. I got into a fight with an agent at Perfect Game in, I think, 2006. Like, not coming to blows or anything, but I was accused of buying Xboxes for one of his clients, which, one, I actually knew his client, and he sucked. And secondly, I didn't like him, and I most certainly did not offer to buy him anything, much less an Xbox. And he starts screaming at me in Jupiter. Like, he sees me and just starts yelling at me. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And he's like, you look like you crawled out of a garbage can. What the hell are you wearing? And I'm like, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not even going to argue with you on that point. You are absolutely right. But yeah. Xbox for that guy? Come on now.
Yeah, wait. I'm willing to concede that point, but I am not going any farther than that.
But what's funny is that comment made him angrier.
Oh, I'm sure. It made him furious.
And because he just couldn't understand how little I cared. I'm like, dude, I live here. Like, I don't even like the draft. This is before I absolutely quit going to Perfect Game, but I was on my way out, and everybody saw it, even his coworkers who I actually know and talk to. We still talk about it. It's still hilarious. And the guy who did it, I'm actually okay with him now.
Of course.
But, well, the way it all started, true story, was after a Florida State League game, I was waiting for one of my clients at the time, and he was waiting for one of my clients, and I went off on him, and we're just screaming in the Roger Dean Stadium parking lot.
Nothing awkward there.
No, it was hilarious. The player walked out with me, and it was like, ha-ha, look how great I am. And then the guy ends up firing me like 5 years later anyway.
Well, I guess you didn't give him a new Xbox game.
No, more importantly, though, he didn't hire that guy, so the small victories.
Line in the sand on that one.
By the way, there is a legitimate agency out there that calls players in, like, double A. They call their hotel rooms and like try to set up meetings that way. And what I find to be the creepiest way, and I've never really gone over how people acquire their clients and other people, but there is an agent that calls hotel rooms of like double A players saying, we noticed you were on the schedule and coming into town, and we were wondering if you wanted to maybe meet up and talk to us about your career and what we can do for you as an agency. And it's like, did you just call my hotel room?
That's really kind of odd. I mean, it's one thing to meet in the field, but, you know, calling somebody's hotel room that you've never met is a little on the creepy side.
What I really enjoy about it, despite it like being, I guess it's worked for them before, but what I find the best about it is they actually called a kid last year who was roommates of one of my clients, and the client I had actually used to be represented by those guys and fired them for not coming through on a bunch of promises. So they actually accidentally called the guy who fired them and asked him to put them in touch with his roommate, and my guy just hung up on them.
That's a set of guts, I'll say it that way.
Well, I don't think they meant to call the guy right. who fired them. They didn't realize they were roommates.
Oh, that's a shame. That would have been. I actually would have liked the story more if they had realized what they had done.
Yeah. Well, I just God, there's been times where guys have been rough, and I just want to ask. Like in the past, I've been like, you know, if you're asking me this, this, and this, like, what if I called you, like, hey, are any of your teammates looking to hire me? Like, come on, dude.
Yeah. Right.
It's like we all have our own jobs to do.
Oh my God, that's so crazy.
But yeah, agent business. I do not recommend it for people.
Any good celeb run-ins lately?
I saw Lenny Kravitz at the All-Star Game.
Yeah, you were posting that. You went to a concert or something?
Went to the Players Association concert or party, which I go to every year. And every year it's pretty terrible. It's just the DJ and one drink and you leave. And then in Miami, they rented out a warehouse, had spotlights. Roberto Clemente's car was in there in a warehouse. It was like a Stefan party. And then Lenny Kravitz is there, and we're about a foot and a half away from him.
I was going to say, you were periscoping or whatever, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, this is me now. I'm like, what the hell? It's Lenny Kravitz up on stage. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he's throwing a microphone at people, and my wife caught a drumstick, and it was just like, holy crap, you guys are never going to have a better party than this for the Union. Like, good job, Players Association.
How was he live?
I'm not even a Lenny Kravitz
fan. I was going to say, I'm not really a big fan either.
I'm not even a fan of Lenny Kravitz, and that was incredible.
Oh, God, that's crazy. Although I'm sure, like, just seeing that guitar work 4 feet from you has got to be out of control.
The whole band, all of them, it was ridiculous. Everybody was so freaking talented. The bassist, the drummer, just the trumpet player. It really is unbelievable. And again, I couldn't care less about his music.
That's amazing.
But what a good showman. Like, good show. I would never have knowingly paid money to have gone myself, but having gone to it, it's like, damn, I'm glad I went.
That's pretty cool.
Anyway, yeah, it was good. And, Carlos Asuaje was with me at the All-Star Game.
Well, I call that a celeb, yeah.
Yeah, like, we were hanging out at the game. I got to talk to some of the media there. I saw Rosenthal and passing there, and it was good. I got to see a bunch of people I like seeing, and Asuaje being at the All-Star Game was weird. I actually told him that I wasn't used to going to games with clients. The only games I've gone to with clients are guys who have been released, so that was strange for me. And he's like,
point.
Yeah, let's not do that again, ever.
Yeah, let's make this a big new.
Yeah, he was good, though. It was so funny. Like, the day before, I asked him if he was going to come to the game or do anything. He's like, no, I'll just try to make it, you know, try my best to make it myself next year. And the next day, he's like, yeah, my girlfriend wanted to go to the game. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, uh-huh, yep.
I was like, it's still a cool story.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I don't think he's ever going to do it again. He was a little weirded out by just being at a game that he was not playing in, and I don't think he ever wants to feel that ever again. I don't think he wanted to before that, but I think it's easier to articulate for him at this point now.
Well, I will say, if she's still a girlfriend, that's a pretty good chip to play. Hey, you want to go to the All-Star Game? That's a lot better than me saying, hey, do you want to go to, you know, the prime rib or something? You know, it's a little
different. Yeah, she was cool. They got to go to the All-Star Game. I know her pretty well. They've been together a while, and no, it was. I'm glad he got to see it. He's from down here, and it's like I tried to tell my dad to go to one of the games, either the Futures game or something down there. Was, you know, we all grew up down here, so even if the game didn't matter, it'd still be cool to see the All-Star Game in Miami.
We have time for I have three random questions for you that I've had for like 2 months that I've wanted to ask. So
yeah, that's fine.
Definitely completely random. First one, favorite stadium to watch a game.
Camden, no question.
Now, why is that, from your childhood stuff, or is that just?
I don't know. I've always liked that stadium better than the rest of them. Camden's always been my favorite. Although, if you want to blame it on growing up, going to Joe Robbie was my personal favorite, only because I grew up there. But there's no question, Camden's the best baseball stadium for me.
Really, over PNC or
I've
San
been all of them. I figured out I've been to 23 of them, but for me, Camden's the best.
All right, very cool. Celebrity dead or alive you would most want to meet, and I don't know, I know you don't drink, so have dinner with.
I drink. I just don't drink regularly. It's not a big deal to me. Probably Hunter S. Thompson.
Interesting. Well, that goes back to your school and stuff too. That's interesting.
Oh yeah, I would definitely pick Hunter S. Thompson. In fact, looking back on it, I'm 100% sure that's who I would pick.
All right. Very cool. Final one.
I'm sad I never got to go to the Woody Creek Owl Farm and hang out with him while he was alive. And I saw Nirvana, so I'm going to leave Cobain out of it.
Right. That's a good point, too. Actually, that would have been my guess.
I hung out with Mitch Hedberg. So in the comedy world, I've met all the comics I wanted to meet.
All right.
Except for Marc Maron. I'd love to meet Marc Maron still, and I haven't been able to make it happen.
That's true. We need to, you even met Mr. Belding. So,
I was going to tell you for $250, I think next week, Mario Lopez is doing a meet and greet at the casino an hour from my house.
Oh my God. Really?
I don't know. I'd have to buy cosmetics, but it might be worth it.
I mean, just to see those dance moves, it might be worth it.
I almost told my wife it would be very difficult for me to go to that and not make some smart-ass remark about the sexual assault charges that got dismissed from him.
That's where you would go?
Oh. I would go there to him. I was not the Slater fan. I was not a Mario Lopez fan. He cheated on Allie Landry the first week they were married.
Yeah, but that's not where – you're not going to insult him for being part of the Spandex Twins or some of these other crazy things that he did?
No, I totally go to the steroids or sexual assault because they're both true. And if he really did do that, screw him.
Well, I can't necessarily argue with that. My final question is best hockey goalie of all time.
Dominic Hasek.
Really? Over Grant Fuhr, Patrick Waugh?
I would pick him. Roberto
Luongo?
Quite obviously most likely Patrick Waugh, but Dominic Hasek was on so many bad teams and made them good by himself. First non-position player, like first goalie to win the MVP in like 60 years. Won like the triple crown for goalie awards every year in an era where there was Marty Brodeur and Patrick Waugh.
I mean, Brodeur could be in the mix too. I didn't even throw him in.
Probably Brodeur or Waugh, but I have a soft spot for Hasek as he was my favorite player.
Not even Luongo?
Luongo is a good exercise in unrealized potential because he could have been the greatest.
I mean, he played on some bad teams too. I mean, he was good, but
I got to watch many of them.
Yeah, good point.
He was in the Islanders, and then he came here, and they were horrible. And he was good in Vancouver. He was a game away from winning the Stanley Cup, and didn't, and that was it for him. But I mean, if you were picking like best goalies of all time, you'd have to have what? Brodeur, Watt, Ken Dryden, Jack Plante. There's just a lot of goalies, but to make it much easier in a cop out, I think the greatest European goalie is probably Tretiak or Hasek.
Yeah. All right. That's
fair. Tretiak was the Russian, the Soviet Union's goalie in the Miracle on Ice game, but he's long considered the best goalie to ever live.
Oh, that's where I know that name from. I was like, I know that name. I'm like,
yeah, everybody thinks he's the greatest goalie to ever live. And interestingly enough, he was the goalie coach for Chicago. And I actually have a cool goalie story about Hasek. Back in 1991, when the Penguins won their first Stanley Cup with Jagr and Lemieux, or 91-92,
mm-hmm.
They played the Blackhawks. And that Blackhawk team had Belfour, Jeremy Roenick, Chris Chelios, a lot of good players, Hall of Famers. And one of the complaints Jeremy Roenick had at the time is when they were, going through a scoring slump and they couldn't score against Pittsburgh's goalie. It was Tom Barrasso at the time and Ken Reggett. So they just couldn't score goals. So they go to practice and try to get out of the slump, and they'd have to face Ed Belfour and their backup, Dominic Hasek.
Yeah, nice.
So they said, we go into a slump scoring against the Penguins. We go to practice and then we get into an even bigger slump.
Yeah, we wouldn't see a puck go in for weeks at a time. Great.
Yeah, and what's crazy is Belfour was an undrafted free agent and Hasek was a seventh round pick, in 84. So neither guy was expected to do anything. And that's what that's still for me what I love about hockey and their draft process is you look at the Red Wings and they get Zetterberg in the seventh and Datsyuk in the ninth. And you could look at the Rangers with one of their last picks in the draft. They take Henrik Lundqvist, and you could still find Hall of Famers in the ninth round in hockey. For the baseball equivalency, that's like finding a 35th rounder who ends up a big leaguer, or say a 34th rounder who ends up in the Mets rotation.
Well, and to go back to topics we've covered before, that can happen because you have really good scouts beating the weeds all over the world because it's a worldwide draft versus limiting yourself to.
I'm still a proponent of that. I would love the draft to go worldwide, and I do know there would be a huge cost, and I don't know who would front that. I don't know if it would be every single team and the league because the Bureau would have to expand, but it would be expensive. But ultimately, I do believe it would improve the game for everybody because look at the NBA, look at the NHL, and I mean, the NFL's not even against a worldwide draft. I mean, somebody got drafted from, Bjorn Werner came to Tallahassee and played for FSU for a year, but he's foreign, and I know some tight end and O-lineman from Germany got selected, so, it's not like that's ever going to really take over the NFL for years, but hockey's never had a problem with it since they implemented it, and the NBA certainly doesn't have a problem. I mean, that's a big thing when you get up against the salary cap. You just stash guys overseas.
Well, and the same thing would happen that's happened here is they would have, a perfect game of the world where they would have, tournaments and showcases and everything else in various countries, and that's how you would scout them. I mean, they would just outsource that work, so to speak. I mean, that's the same thing that's happened here.
And I don't think it would hurt the model that's stateside. I mean, those kids would still all get scouted just the same. I mean, I think the competition to get the money would be a lot harder, obviously, because there's only so much to go around. But at the same time, I think it would be better for everybody, and it would help small market clubs. It would help everybody. So.
Well,
we'll see. I mean, if they're not going to go the route that I would prefer, which is everyone becomes a free agent with a cap. Not even with a cap. I mean, everyone becomes a free agent and let the free market decide it. Then if they're not going to do that, or even if they did it with a cap, which is not what I would want, but if let's say they did do it that way, then if they're not going to do that, then a worldwide draft would be much smarter, with the only guys being exempt would be the professionals from other countries, because I don't think that would be very fair if you're a pro somewhere else and you get stuck under the entry level system here.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a little, if Otani all of a sudden decided to come over, it would be a little crazy if all of a sudden he was making, league minimum, although he might end up doing it anyways.
Yeah, we'll see. It would remove the incentive for them to come over, for anyone to come over stateside if they're professional somewhere else. You look at hockey. In the KHL, Ilya Kovalchuk's making $12-13 million a year tax-free over there. Who is going to be able to pay him that here?
Yeah, it's not even legitimately feasible when it's tax-free.
No, you can't compete with those offers. The only incentive you have to get a guy to come over here, it would be to sell them that you're playing against the best in the world. And a lot of guys do want to do that, but people won't remember this name. But back in the turn of the century, 98, 99, 2000, the Flyers had traded for a guy that was the star of the 98 Olympics named Yuri Dopita from the Czech Republic.
Yeah, I got him.
When the Czech Republic, the Czech won the gold medal that year, mostly because of Dominik Hasek's awesomeness, but they won the gold that year, and Dopita led the team in scoring and just was dominant. He'd been drafted like four times, and at the time, I think the Panthers owned his rights. And they traded him to the Flyers for a couple draft picks, and he ends up signing with the Flyers and was terrible, gets traded to Edmonton, and then that was it. But he made more money over his career. He didn't come over to stateside until he was like in his mid-30s because he made all of his money playing in the Czech Republic. So the NHL lost out on that guy's entire career because of the way the salary structure used to be, and I'm, fortunately that seemingly has stopped.
Yeah, well, good point, like you say.
Well, baseball should have it easier, too, because we have the whole minor league system in place. So why not? What would stop a team from scouting India and then finding a guy and throwing a dart in the 40th round? That would be cool for everyone, and maybe it works.
I completely agree with you. Why not? And if you need to make the draft 50 rounds because now you're going all worldwide,
they would have
fine.
To expand the draft back to what it used to be. I'm telling you, I don't care what it takes. I miss the days when I was a kid and you'd read like the whole draft transaction. It'd be 108 rounds and it wouldn't end until somebody stopped picking.
And it would fill up like the entire back page of the USA Today sports section. Like they would list the whole thing.
That's how you found out your guys would get drafted. I remember when I was a kid, like 13, 14 years old, when I started getting into like Baseball America big time. When that was the year I started, you know, going to minor league games. I remember the drafts coming up. I'm like, oh, I wonder who everyone got. And then you'd wait for the issue to come out or the newspaper, and then you'd read all the draft picks and be like, oh, I don't know who any of these people are, but sweet.
Yeah, but there are players now. Yeah.
So now, I mean, yeah. Hunter Green can't go anywhere without signing an autograph that people are trying to sell. I mean, he already personalizes everything. And I mean, if you could find a baseball, I mean, Hunter Green signed balls are $400 or $500 now. When I was a kid, if you found like a ball signed by JD Drew while he was at FSU, maybe it was worth $20. So the whole industry has been flipped on its head, where the younger you are, the more potential you have, the more valuable you are, and the proven commodities are worthless. I remember walking around the All-Star game and there was a signed photo, or I'm sorry, there was a signed card of Bob Gibson for $40 that I nearly bought, and I should have. It was pretty cool. I already have his autograph, but there was a signed card of him for $40, and right next to it there was a Marcelo Ozuna signed card for $40, and I'm just like, what in what universe would this ever happen?
Yeah, exactly. Bob Gibson's one of the 10 best pitchers alive, and Marcelo Ozuna is a very good outfielder.
He's a great player. Yeah, he's a great player, great guy. It's just, why would someone pay that for – why would you pay for nearly any active player as much money as you would pay for, say, Bob Gibson? And I understand the scarcity and how much he signed and blah, blah, blah. But even free tip that I've always – I always give the free tips that no one pays attention to. But if you write to, like, the Detroit Tigers Foundation, I know it's on their website, they have a price list for every single player's signature on the team. So, like, Miguel Cabrera for – a photo is $100, a jersey is $300, which totally worth it. And it's all tax deductible, goes to charity. And Al Kaline, you can get a signed card Al Kaline right now. If you just send Al Kaline a letter through that foundation, it's $10. Why don't more people do that?
That's true. God, yeah. Jeez.
Al Kaline, $10. Or you could go on eBay and buy some minor league guy who might not make it.
Yeah, and if he's ever in the same breath as Al Kaline, it would be amazing.
Well, there was an article on Vice the other day I was reading talking about like the mysterious Chris Bryant $20,000 rookie card numbered out of 50, and I was just going through scenarios in my head in which I would pay 20 grand for anybody playing baseball right now, like for a baseball card. Who in the big leagues would I buy that's worth 20 grand? And I couldn't even – the thought exercise didn't work.
You got to start with Trout is the only one, and
would be the only one, or Harper, and even then, it's like for 20 grand, I could legitimately go buy a Mickey Mantle rookie.
Yeah, and I can't imagine, like you say. I mean, I know, you know, supply and demand, and yada yada yada. But yeah, as you say, that's hard to fathom.
Right. I mean, I could almost buy what. It still doesn't work for me, but somebody spent $200,000-$300,000 on like LeBron James's rarest autographed rookie card last year. Okay, that seems incredibly stupid to me, but I don't think they're going to lose money on something like that. But if you don't have, like, even if somebody wanted to spend 100 grand or 20 grand on Derek Jeter, that would make more sense to me than anyone active right now, because those guys transcend the sport. You don't transcend the sport, you're just not worth that kind of money, I don't think.
Yeah, that I completely.
Aaron Judge has a chance to transcend the sport. What a good guy for baseball.
Yeah, and still 20 grand. Yeah.
There's cards of him for 20 grand online. There was a Bowman rookie for him on eBay that everyone was talking about at the All-Star game. There was $100,000.
Who's buying that? Like,
that's what I don't understand.
I mean, is that like investment firms buying that? I mean, because individuals aren't buying that card.
They can't be. And I mean, Charlie Sheen used to be a really big buyer and collector of stuff like that, and he just sold all of it. And you look at what Charlie Sheen got. He had the original paperwork for Babe Ruth's sale to the Boston Red Sox, and I think that went for several hundred thousands of dollars. Like, why wouldn't you want to buy that more than whatever baseball card that's out now?
I mean, that would be scary how cool that would be to own. I mean, that would be up there with owning, like, you know, the letter
Lanny
that Doc
Ruth
got,
20,
you know, in
Babe
Back
Ruth's
to the Future 3. I mean, you know.
Oh, that was really a smart non-purchase by me. But no, I was saying he owned Babe Ruth's 27 World Series ring, which, okay, well, I don't know how much cooler baseball memorabilia you can get than that.
Yeah. It's like you say, you could. Who was it? You weren't going to get a Babe Ruth autograph, because once you get that, it's kind of, where else do you
go
from
there? Nothing else. There's nothing else when you buy one. And I've had countless times that I wanted to, but it's for me, the thing I like collecting, and I still do, is the more obscure names, because not only are they forgotten, which I like learning about those players, that it's like, can you imagine what they would make today? They're just harder to find, you know, they're just obscure, and I like getting those guys because there's just less autographs of them, and they tend to write back. And there was an announcer, Bob Wolf, I think, who just passed away, and I have a card signed by him. I got years, well, I just bought one, but I had one, I thought, and I can't find it, but I just bought one. And he interviewed Derek Jeter and Babe Ruth, and it's like, well, I'd rather have his autograph than most people around now. I mean, the Marlins at their stadium, and I know he's ill right now, but people are going nuts getting whoever's autograph there. But every single day by the exit where the players come out, an elderly man comes out and nobody ever recognizes him, but it's a guy named Philo Ramirez, who's their Latin American broadcaster since 93, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and his autograph's worth a ton of money, and no one ever asks him. Ever.
Amazing.
Like, I've gotten his autograph, but it just shocks me, like, how these people can walk, you know, we're diehard autograph collector, and they walk right past a Hall of Famer.
Well,
it happens.
Yeah, I think that's a good place for us to cut it, Josh. I don't want to.
Yeah, we'll talk next week. Hopefully, you know, the trade deadline works itself out, and we'll have something to talk about.
All right, with that, how does anybody who wants to reach you reach you?
It's my email and Twitter. I'm not writing anymore now, so if anybody knows a good place for me to write, I would like to take my column there.
Yeah, you could also get a podcast if you wanted as well. Just saying.
I've been offered them.
So, all right, Josh, have a good week. Good luck with your players.
You too. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you're the man.
Thank you.
And that was episode 17 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I want to thank Josh for coming on just a few hours, frankly, from the trade deadline and clearing up a little bit of time. And, we had to interrupt this once or twice to take a phone call, but this was a lot of fun, and this was a good call. So thank you very much to Josh, and thank you very much for listening. Bye for now.